This is a HeadGum Original.
You come to this podcast perhaps to review a buffet of hits, to revisit songs that you love, to critique them a little bit, yes, and to see them improved by musical craftsmen. But we mostly, on this podcast, survey delicious, wonderful, beloved hits. Songs that may be flawed, yes, but songs that history and popular opinion can agree are great. And so I'm excited today, but scared to say that we are making a rare outing into the world of utter turds.
I thought you were going to say absolutely perfect. I thought you were going the other direction.
Today we are looking at a song that is so, in my humble opinion, so execrable.
No.
Such utter garbage. Let's punch up this jam. The name of the song is, dare I even say it, Sexy Bitch.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up.
Inevitably, we're going to ask our guest why he picked this song, Evan, and you're going to have to eat your words. He's going to say it was his first dance at his wedding. Maybe he helped write the song. We don't know yet. You're going to get us in trouble.
I do not care. I'm not backing away from this opinion.
Not even with David Guetta and Akon, but with Justin Richmond. We're so excited to have Justin Richmond on Punch Up the Jam this week. If you don't know his podcast, Broken Record, well, let me tell you, he's more than your neighborhood podcast producer.
Thank you for not
saying. I've been listening the last couple of weeks ever since we booked Justin, and I gotta say, I popped off. I was running some errands over the weekend. I popped off the Jackson Browne episode. I feel like I can go pretty deep on my knowledge of Jackson Browne, and some of that was like a refresher for me. But there was some really cool stuff about him and his dad that I had never heard before.
Well, that stuff was incredible.
The stuff about him and his dad, I was like, well, Django Reinhardt is playing in their living room.
Booked them and like play. Great, that's insane.
In their living room.
For our listeners, an overview of the Broken Record podcast is just in-depth interview with one very important figure from popular music history. It's awesome show, interview format. You really get to know people. Robert Plant sounds like a great
Who does the Robert Plant interview?
Rick does it. Rick Rubin does it.
Yes. Yeah. Rick Rubin does a lot of the interviews are done by Rick Rubin, which is, he's more than your neighborhood podcast interviewer.
Yeah. He's yeah, definitely.
From listening to Broken Record, we've learned that you basically know everything about music.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked, what's the single song that you want to talk about for an hour, you chose the David Guetta featuring Akon hit, Sexy Bitch. How did you land on it, Justin? What made you think Sexy Bitch is the song?
I don't know. Is there a more absurd pop hit? I just can't think. Like obviously, like the song, you think about, like, you, people always say, like, oh, like you couldn't make Blazing Saddles today, right? Like, you couldn't do that. It's like, this is a song that you couldn't make today. But it's like, I don't even think you should have made it in 2009. Song is, it's just crazy. And it sort of came at a time when you could not get away from electronic DJ oriented music when you were going out and doing things or like going to a party or whatever. It was the point that it was mind numbing. I hated it. I hated the culture. This song, for some reason, as absurd as it was, and objectively, I understand, as shitty as it is, this song did stand out above the rest. It's undeniably a jam. I don't know. It's a shitty jam.
Have a love-hate relationship with
it. So you're admitting
it's love, but I've never heard something I hate, but I love it. I can't think of another thing.
Oh yeah, we had a similar dynamic the other day when we were talking about Gasolina.
I don't feel that way about that. I just hate it.
That one is pure hate for you.
Pure hate for me.
Okay, well, this is fantastic because we have some time to get to the bottom of what is it that you love and what is it that you hate, and can we separate the two and punch up the hate stuff? For me, it's just pure white hot hate. Just I resent the song. You know, the white hot that comes from like putting a piece of iron in a blacksmith's fire. I don't like it musically. I abhor it lyrically. It feels like it set us back as a society, perhaps. But I'm excited to look at all of those angles.
What I kept coming back around to as I read about all of this, the deep scholarship written on the song, what I kept coming back around to was in that interview after interview with Akon and David Guetta, who are just like gleeful at how well this song did. They're just like, you know, can you believe how great this went? Wow, the world is just really smiling on us. Like, for them, this is just like one of the happiest moments of their lives.
And to recap what that is for the audience, like, this is a song from 2009 that charted on the Hot 100. It hit in the 50s. Yeah. Or so, and it's the first collaboration between Akon, who was just a towering star at the time, and David Guetta, who was also huge but still on his way up.
Yeah, absolutely.
The year-end chart for 2010, the year after it came out, it was 26 on the Hot 100.
So it just stayed on the chart for so long. The year after it came out, it just hovered that it made the year-end chart.
God, yeah.
So every interview they do about Sexy Bitch, they cannot help gleefully saying, like, here's the crazy thing about this song that you're not going to believe. We wrote this in one night. And the problem with saying that about the song Sexy Bitch is, like, as the person listening to the interview, I'm not shocked.
Not surprised. No surprise.
I just can't help but think, like, what if they had spent two nights? Would there be two verses to the song instead of one verse that is sung twice?
So nice they had to say it twice, as the cliche goes, you know? The old hip-hop cliche. I mean,
play the clip.
It really is not the feat that they think it is to say we wrote this. And I remember being at a show one time with the artist who I will not say, like 10 years ago. She is now like a very big artist. And I remember being at the show and she's like, yeah, I write all my own songs. And I remember being like, yeah, I can tell. These kind of suck. Like, you should get a writer. You know?
Her newer songs, now that she's a bigger artist, is she still writing them?
Justin? They still suck. I think she's still writing them.
She's still writing them. Yeah. Every songwriter has a song or two like that. You know, I've read interviews with like Neil Young where he's like, oh, that's one that just came out of me in 15 minutes. And sometimes those work.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just need to spend longer than 15 minutes on your song. Play the quick clip I found of David Guetta talking about Sexy Bitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is from...
This is from an interview. He posted this on his own YouTube channel, so he was like, gotta put this up.
This summarizes his POV.
Sexy Bitch, again, you know, just me being open to life.
Oh, man. It's all bad.
And what he's talking about there is that he was open to life in that Akon came up to him at a show and was like, hey, man, we got to work together sometime.
Yeah, I don't think he's talking about the content of the song. He's like,
it's funny when you, I like to think that it's him being open to life in terms of Sexy Bitches. But Akon came up to him at a show and was just like, hey, man, we got to work together sometime. And David Guetta, they were in London at a festival, was just like, why wait, man? Like, let's rent a studio tonight. And 14 hours later, Sexy Bitch was done. He was open to life. He was ready to do
it. He was open to it.
This gets to the core of a problem with the 2000s, though, like the 2000 to 2009 range, that we were okay with Akon being a phenomenon. Like, that should have been shut down, like, immediately. Like, anytime Akon came up to anybody and said, you know what, man, like, we got to do something, man. Like, I'm feeling the energy. Like, we got to collab. It should have been a hard no every time. But this man had hit after hit.
When you saw Akon's track record at that time, you got to put yourself in the shoes of 2009 David Guetta. So Akon had been broken as a star for about 3 years or so. Yeah. Like, when his first hit came out. The first one I remember is hearing Mr. Lonely.
Mr. Lonely is 2005.
Okay.
He's been on Bartender. He's been on Dangerous. He's done I Want to Love You.
Yeah, okay. Those are all huge hits.
Amazing string of hits.
So you're just seeing dollar signs. If he wants to work with you, yes, you collaborate with this man who prints number ones.
Yeah,
you say yes to that.
So why do you see that as being such a sham in the year 2009, Justin? I mean, that's not the take I expected, I admit.
Well, no, I'll say, like, I mean, I get it from the... Like, obviously, you're right. Like, he's had 3.5-4 years of, like, just a track record of just printing hits. But, I mean, look, man, like, this guy, like, you think about the 90s, who was singing hip-hop hooks? Nate Dogg. Nate Dogg was what we had in the 90s. Like, just, like... If you had Nate Dogg on your hook, it was incredible. The 2000s, if you were like 50 Cent, if you were any rapper of any note, Akon was your guy. That's just, to me, it's a downgrade. You know, I know the numbers show that he had the hits. Just a downgrade. Yeah. We didn't have good taste.
Well, to be in your corner a little bit here, if Akon wasn't a downgrade in the 2000s, we would be able to talk about at least one hook that Akon had sung since the year 2010. Yeah. And I don't know if you can name one. I sure can't.
Yeah.
Personally.
You're saying he didn't put together the longevity.
I'm saying his pretty stunning fall off. Like in 2009, he's putting out Sexy Bitch, and then it's like
nothing.
It's crickets. Get some crickets on the soundboard, Evan, for next episode. Remember, for the next time we're talking about Akon's fall off, we'll
making
put in some
a
crickets.
Note.
Yeah.
For now, all you're going to get is this 8-bit firework that I have.
Woo!
Yeah, that's better. It blew up.
It's like a clue bomb.
And he kind of went in some weird directions after this. Like in 2015, he announced he was going to put out a 5-disc album, and each disc was going to be a different genre. And then none of them ever came out. And then his next album after that was all in Spanish in 2018. Like he hasn't put out an English speaking album in this decade.
And he might be having hits overseas. I mean, who knows? I mean, look, he might really be. Massively successful in Argentina or something. I mean, fine.
Let's talk just for a minute about his current hits overseas, Justin. I don't know if you know about this. Do you know what Akon is currently working on in Senegal?
No idea.
His native land of Senegal. Blew my mind. He is Senegalese. He is currently building a city in Senegal. The name of the city is Akon City. Ground has been broken. The president of Senegal was there. It's a city of the future. He says that it's inspired by Wakanda. There's an education center.
No.
There's a police center. The 3D renderings. Pull up the 3D renderings, Evan. You got to see them because they all look like dildos from the future.
Mr. Convict Music is building a police
center? Mr. Convict Music, yes. He's building a police center. She looks like a dildo. And I usually put Evan on the spot. Every single episode, I put Evan on the spot and I offer to Venmo him $5 if he can answer a trivia question. But I could not resist. This was too rich. This was too juicy. I told Evan already what the answer to this trivia question is. So I'm putting you, Justin, on the spot.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Man.
Akon City, opening sometime this decade, is only going to accept cryptocurrency.
Of course.
For all monetary transactions, but is going to use a proprietary cryptocurrency made by Akon. This already exists.
Please absolve yourself of any stress, Justin. Andrew asks me these trivia questions every episode, and I always lose.
He's only won twice, and he's looking more relaxed than I've ever seen him in a podcast episode, knowing he's not going to have to do this. I know you don't know this, but just put your brain to the test here a little bit and think, what would Akon name his cryptocurrency? One could say his digital coin.
I know it's going to be so obvious. I'm going to be so mad that I don't get it. Like,
That's the nature of the stupidest thing.
Oh, man. Akon, Convict. What was all this stupid? I'm just going
to Mr. Lonelyarium.
Right. Mr. Lonelyarium. What was it?
Currency. It's a digital currency. One could call it a digital coin.
A digital coin.
Okay. Yep. Crypto token.
A cron. I don't know, man. What is
it? It's gonna be a coin.
Oh, shit.
You're gonna go to Akon City and spend all your A coin. It's trading at eight cents an A coin right now.
I might invest. Listen, he's building an entire city that's gonna be using this money or whatever it is.
Honestly, I should have. I'm glad you didn't get it because I think I would have been legally required to pay your $5 in A-Coin. Mm. And then I would have had to figure out how to get $5 of A-Coin.
I could have been a millionaire in like 5 years. Damn it. Is he going to be like the Eddie Murphy of the city? Like, is this going to be the, he's going to be getting his royal baths? And I mean, I can't, what is going on, man?
The Coming to America scene where he lives in a golden palace and women come to fan him with giant feathers and stuff. I think that very well could be his vision.
I mean, I have to wonder if that's already the reason why his career is falling off in 2010 is because he's already getting those royal baths from Ladies with Feathers in 2010, even before he has his own proprietary Wakanda-inspired city. So once you're living that life in 2010, you no longer have that convict music hustle.
Don't have that mentality. He's lost that mentality.
But 2009 Akon, it's a different story. Mm-hmm. People think...
Still hungry.
The road is never going to fall off for this guy. He runs into David Guetta at the festival in London. And David Guetta has a different story, right? Like, the crazy thing about this to me, Evan and I were watching the Sexy Bitch video earlier today. Have you watched it,
Justin? I haven't seen it in a long time.
And you were talking about how, like, 2009 is just kind of, like, a weird time in terms of, like, what we would accept. Like, yeah. For instance...
What would you accept musically, yeah.
Yeah, like, what would you accept musically? Like, oh, they did this in one night, but, oh, that's cool. You can make a song in one night. In 2009, that's kind of, like... a novelty. Now it's accepted that Billie Eilish and her brother can, like, make a whole album in their bedroom. Like, yeah, sure. 2009 seems cool. When you watch the video from 2009 of Sexy Bitch, you realize that 2009 was the absolute nadir in the history of the world for the music video. It's like
as an art form.
It's like 5 years after TRL no longer matters.
Yeah,
right?
RIP yeah. TRL.
But it's also like when all of the major labels are still boycotting YouTube, and before you have like viral YouTube hits like Call Me Maybe and Gangnam Style and Somebody That I Used to Know in like 2010, 2011, 2012. And it's like the music video looks like a bad student film shot on like a cheap camera. And when they're like pitching the video to Akon, they're like, get this, part of it's going to be underwater. And he's like, done. Great. And it's just, you know, a couple bikini models show up that they like found on Craigslist. It's just one of the worst videos. But the crazy thing about it to me was, I should have put this on tape, Evan, because you would have lost $5 and been ashamed.
Yikes.
Is it David Guetta in 2009, in the Sexy Bitch video, I had this mind-boggling moment where I realized that David Guetta, when this video was shot, was 42 years old.
Oh!
Is it like... Like I knew David Guetta was like a little older than the average DJ, but David Guetta is like practically a baby boomer. He's 2 years away from being an official boomer.
He's old enough to be an AARP right now. So at the time of Sexy Bitch, he's already in his 40s, 20 years older than Akon.
That's too old. That's too old to be making Sexy Bitch. It's too old. It's too
old. How much do you forgive him based on the fact that French is his first language? You're just like, this guy doesn't understand. This guy doesn't understand the offense. Maybe people have convinced him that this is just how we flirt. You follow what I'm asking here, though? I mean, I don't want to forgive him anything. To me, this song is a mortal sin, possibly punishable by life without parole. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there is something that, like, when you talk to someone who speaks English as a second language, someone from Russia or Argentina or France, there is a lack of understanding that cuss words are cuss words. Because they've learned English from music and movies and TV shows. Like, if you talk to a French person, they don't have an understanding that, like, you just can't say, like, fuck in front of kids, for instance. or that most people would not like you to do that. And so I kind of wonder if maybe Sexy Bitch is a little bit more of a compliment in the mind of David Guetta than it is
to
the average
person. He's probably thinking, you know, oh yeah, this is hip hop. This is cool. This is what we do. You know, he's like, finally, I'm in hip hop, baby. Like,
yes, I've crossed over. I've crossed over from the beeps and the bloops into hip hop.
Yeah, we're doing it, baby. This is it. We got it. We got a drop, and we got Sexy Bitch. We got this is EDM. This is hip hop. This is like, you know, he's thinking he's Rick Rubin doing Run DMC and Aerosmith, getting them together, man. He really thought he was doing something. That's my belief, and he kind of did. He did do something.
Yeah, and the whole album that this is on just has. I mean, he was so hot at this moment. He has the craziest features on this album because it's Will.i.am, it's Akon, it's Kelly Rowland, and like every song has a feature. And I have to believe that he felt like he was spending borrowed money because he's a 42-year-old man who's just breaking out. And he had a 20-year career as like a club manager in Paris. Like, I'm sure that life is very fun and, like, in many ways very fulfilling and very exciting, but it's not the same as traveling around the world and playing to tens of thousands of people with your buddy Akon.
Yeah. 42 years old is insane. I can't get past it.
Justin is shocked.
It's a weird time to be producing I've Got a Feeling for the Black Eyed Peas and all of a sudden be like, I have a number one hit for just dozens of
is
weeks.
Is Geddy responsible for that too?
Yes.
I believe wow. he is. I believe he is.
Now, that's a song I hate, hate. It's like hate, hate. But this song, I hate it.
Well, I love it. I don't know.
I think pretty much everyone is in your corner on that one. It's a song that did not age well. Aged like milk.
I mean, to us, that's true. I think millions of suburban moms around the country might feel differently. It's just pure commercial sunshine. You know, it's schlock.
I am saying it here. I you can Venmo me $5 in 30 years if I'm right, that this song will have replaced John Lennon's Imagine at the ball drop.
When I've got
Ryan
a feeling.
Seacrest is like 70 years old and still hosting the damn ball drop. I got a feeling it's going to be the song instead of John Lennon's.
Well, one Imagine. Thing I think that I've Got a Feeling has in common with Sexy Bitch is that it's a great song for people who speak English as a second language.
I'm dying to hear why you love this song, and if it perhaps has to do with your command of the English language, let me just get into the playback on this intro.
Okay, it's a pretty cool synth. The synth is the bloopy synth.
Not too different from, like, Kid Cudi's Day and Night, like the...
Who also guessed it on this yes, album, this David Guetta album.
Yeah, it does sound like that Kid Cudi track. That
I mean, little did David Guetta produce it?
Oh, man. We're going to go down a real wormhole if we're just asking each other, did David Guetta produce that one track? The answer is probably yes. Okay, I just want to talk a little bit on the music angle. Eventually, the next thing we're going to hear is the beat drops, and you're going to hear this pattern. And that is the only pattern in the song. In the key of B minor, that's like 1, 3, when I'm talking about scale degrees, 1, 3, 6, 3, 4, and it goes back. And then the rest of the song is, every section is the same, just either soft, medium, or loud. It doesn't change. But I have this pet theory that beginning this opening intro, they play that pattern 4 times. Twice in the same place. We call that on the one because it starts like on home base of the song.
Like James Brown, baby, on the one.
Yes.
Ghetto's on the one.
You always start on the one. Then they play it on the 4 and the 5. So it goes up like this. Play that again. Then they start on the 4, the 4th scale degree. And then on the 5. And my pet theory basically is like that's how David Guetta started writing the song. Like, that's going to be the progression over which we write the whole track. 1, 1, 4, 5. And then he forgot about that and pulled up another beat he was working on, which is boom, 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 boom. And then just forgot to take out the intro, which in this next section you'll hear keeps playing over the main beat. It doesn't actually go together. He just forgot about it. And it's just still in there because they only worked on it one night.
One night?
It doesn't deeply clash, but these are not written in the same pattern.
Yeah, every time that they tried to fix something in the recording session, it was just like a episode of Lost from the year 2005, where someone ran up to the soundboard and just screamed, "There's no time for that! There's no time for that!
There's no time for fixing!"
And then they just went on to the next part of the song.
We have to print this before dawn! Here, check out this next section where the bass is going to come in. You'll hear the bloopy synth going, then plays that same thing higher. And then it cycles that while the bass enters. Once the bass comes in, that's the section that defines the whole song. And they just kind of forgot to quit playing the bloopy synth or just decided this is good enough.
Okay, it works here. It makes sense here.
Yeah, because there's nothing else. Now the bass is in real soft. She's a diva. I feel the same and I wanna meet her. They say she low down. That's what I'm talking about. On that last section, the bass has come in real quiet with this sort of underwater sound. While this thing is still playing.
Yeah, it's...
Listen to that syncopation. Listen to that.
Oh, it sounds miserable when you play it, when you put the two notes, just the two notes there.
When you play it in the same miserable. Instrument, the piano, you start to
wait,
hear
wait,
how
wait,
like...
Wait. Do that again. Hold on. Holy shit.
Those are the notes that are going together. When you put them in the same instrument, you can really hear the clash. Now, because of all the reverb.
You are playing that in a different key. You're playing...
Listen to what I just played. I'm going to roll that section back. We don't need to dwell on this so long, but it really tickled me when I was like they wrote this intro over a progression that's 1-1-4-5. And then they just forgot to change that up or mute it or whatever when they got to the main section, which is 1-3-6-3. So here's where they come in together. Here it's fine, and now the chord changes right here. Here's a clash. So your ear doesn't mind it too much because it's just drenched in all this reverb.
And it's such a soft sound.
It's just soft. The bass is underwater. You know,
you're in a trance from those drums, those beautiful sounding drums. Akon's voice is just, you know, doing a number on you. Those lyrics, you're... Transfix.
You're coming in here with all your rules about music theory, all your ideas about what notes should be played when, and you know what you're forgetting?
I don't have any rules. David Guetta can do whatever he wants.
You know, just me being open to life.
You're just being open to life, Evan, and that's why you put dissonant notes next to each other. That must be why it is. And it's not because they made the song in one
night. It's not because they ran out of time and just didn't mute their first idea. They got to their second idea and just left the first idea in. So as we'll see, this bass line, beep, 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 bam, bam, that's just the rest of the song, either soft, medium, or loud. But you wonder, where did David Guetta get this second idea, this cool bass
riff? Oh, that's a good bass. That's a good bass line. How did he come up with that so fast?
How did he come up with that sound? Where did he ever think of? Where did he ever? Well, he probably wasn't listening to soft.
Yeah, he wouldn't be listening to soft.
He wouldn't know. He's French. Yeah. He wouldn't know anything
about
those
music
UK
from the same decade
guys, right? He would. He probably wouldn't listen to.
42 in 2009. He was hearing that.
Or would he listen to the Rihanna song that samples that Soft Cell song, Rihanna, with whom he collaborated a number of times?
Yeah, seems suspicious. I'll say, in 2006, Rihanna's songwriting team had to give a songwriting credit to the guy who originally wrote the song in the 1960s. Ed Cobb is listed as a writer on Rihanna's SOS. How is Ed Cobb not on Sexy Bitch? He would have been dead for 10 years when Sexy Bitch came out, but that would have been a badass writing credit.
So you're saying Guetta got away with one here where he's lifted the whole bass line, beep, 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 beep. He's lifted the whole thing, used it for the entire premise of Sexy Bitch.
I'm saying,
didn't credit Soft Cell or the writers.
Especially in a post-Blurred Lines world. Where Olivia Rodrigo is having to give Taylor Swift a co-writing credit on like half of her songs because she said in an interview, like, I really like Taylor Swift. Like, Ed Cobb's estate should be suing for royalties on Sexy Bitch.
This is a great strategy, though. In the post-Blurred Lines world where everyone is scared to like copy the vibe of even the vibe of something, just make it, if you're going to copy something, make it so terrible that no one's gonna want to be. They don't want to be on the Wikipedia page for this song. Like Ed Cobb and his descendants, or whoever owns his estate, runs his estate. They don't want to be on the Wikipedia page for this song.
I love that idea that like Ed Cobb's estate's lawyer came to like his daughters and was like, "This is gonna be millions of dollars." And they were like, "Oh my gosh, what's the song?" He spun it up, and they were just like, "We're good.
Sweep this under the rug. Let this one go."
Okay, gentlemen, let's get into the actual lyrical content of this piece of duty caca. Let me play what we can reasonably call the verse here. I don't believe her. Yes, I can see her. They say she needs to slow down.
The baddest thing around town. They're pretty generic, all that stuff.
To recap the lyrics of verse one, yes, I can see her. Every girl in here want to be her. Oh, she's a diva. I feel the same, and I want to meet her. They say she low down. That's just a rumor, and I don't believe them. They say she needs to slow down. The baddest thing around town.
For me, that's all like fine. That's all fine.
Yeah, straight up fine.
What do we think the true accusation, though, in the loaded
the lowdown
is? What's the accusation there?
It's hard to say, right? Lowdown comes with a certain connotation. So you think maybe he's saying, so you think this is a very misogynistic, they say she's low down, but I don't believe it because she's gonna see me and she's gonna want some of this. So there's that interpretation, but it's low down. They say she's low down. I don't believe, they say she needs to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So are they accusing, is this a moment of shaming?
Yeah, that's how I heard it. He's saying that she gets around, right? That she needs to slow down in how much she's sleeping around, right? That's what Akon and David Guetta are saying.
Yeah, I heard it as the just sort of traditional sexist shaming of promiscuity. But as far as pop lyrics go, it's like, it's fine.
Yeah, but I'm sure Akon will rise to her defense later.
Sure. Well, he's about to drop a supreme compliment on her. Andrew, let me play this next couplet where he really rises to her defense.
That's very nice. That's very nice. That's very nice. That is very.
She's nothing like a girl you've ever seen before. Like, nothing you can compare to your neighborhood whore.
Never has there been a lower bar to clear.
I mean, I recommend. I mean, Valentine's Day just passed, but I mean, next year I would recommend you save that for your significant other. That's a line that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the lowest bar to clear. Like, oh, how's this new girl you're dating? Well, I gotta say, she's better than a neighborhood whore. What?
Darling, these last 2 years we've spent together have been nothing but bliss. And I've just dropped to one knee, and I'd like to present you with this token of my love and commitment. You're nothing like a neighborhood whore.
You have to think that even for those writers on the song who speak English as a second language, that's, you know, wouldn't go over well in their native tongues either.
The phrasing here is that the line is being set up as a massive compliment, burnishing her image. And what has instead happened is a low insult to this girl, and also calls into question, like, who is the person that we'd be calling a neighborhood whore? I'm not sure this person exists or should be shamed either.
Right. The person the song isn't about, but who's like best friends with this lady, is standing over there and being like, I can't believe you called me the neighborhood whore. God, like, what? Akon, I'm right over here. I'm your sister's best friend.
Yeah, I don't want to take for granted that a person even exists who is the neighborhood whore. Akon is setting up this straw woman to be contrasted with. I don't think she exists.
I mean, I just hope he has learned some of these lessons, or is learning some of these lessons, between 2009 and when Akon City opens.
I worry that he hasn't, because my understanding is that Akon has four wives.
Huh.
And he may have a different understanding of marriage or male-female relationships than we do.
I will be checking the website out later to just check in on their marriage laws and try to wrap my head around that.
We call this in the music biz the pre-chorus. You can hear, like, the bass line hasn't changed.
It got louder. It's not a fuzzier.
It got fuzzier. Yeah, it's not a deeply new section. It feels new in EDM terms because they turned up the buzz on the instrument. But we call this the pre-chorus. It's sort of the rising action. It rises towards what we call the chorus or the hook or the drop here. Let's just play out the rest of the pre-chorus. I'm trying to find the words to describe this girl without being
disrespectful. The way that booty moves. He's trying, guys. I can't take no more. Had to stop what I'm doing so I can pull. Hold on. Can we stop it there?
Have to stop what I'm doing. Like, it's just getting worse.
I mean, the only thing I can compare her booty to is a tractor beam. Like, Akon is trying so hard to be respectful. He's trying not to grind on her booty, but the booty is just drawing him in to both grind on her booty and also to be, dare I say it, disrespectful.
Yeah, he's trying to find the words to describe this girl without being disrespectful. And he just can't do it. He's trying, and he fails.
The pulling close. I mean, again, how is this song on the radio? I mean, even in the censored version, Sexy Chick, you know, we're not to this part yet. But even in the censored version, these are still the lyrics. That's insane.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Even in the censored version, like this part is still playing out. I have to stop what I'm doing so I can pull her clothes.
Guys, go easy on them. They wrote this song in just one night, okay? This is good for one night, okay? Take that into consideration.
The world agreed. The world.
Okay. Well, when you put it that way, yeah, I really got to hand it to him. Like, this is pretty good. Well, we just got to get to the hook, which, in my opinion, is one of the worst things to transpire on the radio waves. That's the whole thing.
We're halfway through the song, and we've heard every lyric to the song
already. We've heard the whole song, even though it's only halfway over. We heard a verse about the neighborhood. No, about the she needs to slow down. Then the pre-chorus, the rising action about how she's not a neighborhood whore yet. I'm trying not to be disrespectful. Then the hook is just saying sexy bitch over and over.
This is what he's come up with. This is the respectful way he's come up with yes. describing this wonderful woman that's in the club with him is sexy bitch. The best he could do.
And he's pinning the blame on the booty. He's saying, like, I was trying not to be disrespectful, but the way you moved your booty, I just had to say it.
Basically entrapment.
Yes. Yes. The other thing.
So you think he's admitting to failure here? They're like, he's in on the joke. He's saying, like, I'm trying to not be respectful, but I can't. You're sexy, bitch.
Yeah, he's saying that she's so sexy that no matter how hard he tried, it was really her fault the way she was dancing, which is messed up. It's a messed up
thing. Which is even more. In a way, it's like almost, it just gets, there's no, there's no way to spin it without it just being like, this is it.
Yeah, it's like, and when you look at it, the tractor beam, like, way, it actually gets worse. I think it's adjacent to, like, victim blaming. it's adjacent to being like, well, she looked really sexy.
Mm-hmm, well, she shouldn't have dressed that way.
Yes, it's bad. The other thing that is really bad about this course that I truly despise, we were chatting about this a little bit off mic, is... the bass line turns into, I think this is the first time we've heard it, Evan, just bouncing that dun, 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 that Tainted Love bass line.
Yeah.
But they start playing it in open fifths. And it sounds so bad to me to not have that chord filled out. And it's the parallel open fifths just drives me crazy when I listen to this song.
Oh, interesting.
And I just can't help but think, would a third note have been something you could have added into the song on the second night?
Open fifths meaning that they're playing the bass line, boom, boom, and they harmonize every note with one other note.
And it's always a fifth.
It's a fifth away.
Horrible.
Yeah, it sounds like this.
They're like music theory textbooks written about how you should not do this.
Now,
it's so bad.
I mean, granted, those textbooks are writing about classical music where like a different set of rules apply. In EDM, you know, you do whatever you want. Just, it's all about the bleeps and the creeps and the bloops that you're using, less so than did you harmonize it right. But I see what you're saying, that it has a certain hollowness when you harmonize it.
It's so great to me.
Yeah, and they could have made it, or Geta could have made it a chord by playing it this way. Or harmonizing it, like...
Yeah. He ran over and started to add in a third note, and Akon just went, no! There's no time for that!
There's no time for that right now!
There's no time for that! Two notes only!
Akon knew where the magic was, man.
Yeah, he's like, we've already captured the spirit of this song.
The spirit of this song is respect.
Spin up the rest of the song, Evan. I don't know if we need to stop again.
I don't think we need to stop. We have heard the whole song. What happens now is going right back to the top of verse 2, which is verse 1. They just sing the thing again. They only wrote 90 seconds of a song again in one night. But they knew that in order to be considered a single, it needed to be 3 minutes long. They just doubled it. Here we go. Notice at this point, they have muted that intro that happened at the beginning. They remembered to mute it. So you don't hear that.
That's how it sounds.
Okay, now we're back to this. Identical lyrics. Every girl wants to be her.
Terrible kick, by the way.
Yeah, great point. This is kind of a clunky.
And we're like four kick on the drums. Floor. Just kick drum. Is there any other drum in it other than the four on the floor kick?
Well, here comes the pre-chorus back around.
So here we already have the open fifth in on this pre-chorus.
I'm just gonna fade it down a little bit. For me, I could never hear this song as like happening in the real world other than a really aggressive and ugly catcall. But I can imagine the song being loved in an anthemic way amongst girlfriends, or let's say blasting at a drag show. Like, it really works there. Damn.
Well, you know what? I gotta say, this song, I was thinking, works a lot better if it's Rihanna singing and not Akon.
Yeah. And she's singing to another woman, complimenting her, you're saying?
She's singing to another, singing to her girlfriends. She's singing to her friends, you know? And it's girls just gassing each other up.
The only...
Absolutely.
The only Achilles heel of your theory is that can also be said for every other Akon song.
Yeah. It's better. Would it be better if it was Rihanna?
Yes. Just imagine if she was singing the hook on Bartender.
Yeah.
Which my other pet theory about T-Pain's Bartender is it's the only T-Pain song that I really wish we could have heard George Jones sing. Just imagine if George Jones had done the hook for Bartender. Yeah. Just the possum. The possum
I'm
in there with T-Pain.
Bartender.
Yeah.
Give me a drink.
We were talking a lot about the punch up before we started, just me and Evan. Justin, and there's like a version of this where you like get to the chorus and you like say something incredibly respectful, but that, like, frankly, as we talked about it, it's hard to make that funny.
It's very hard. It's very hard. There's also a version where maybe the first chorus is the disrespectful version, and then the second course, he's evolved. Mm-hmm. He's finally found. He's become a better human. He's figured out. He's cracked the code, and he's come up with something better than
he
sexy.
He spends
bitch.
More than one night on it, and there's a second verse and a second chorus.
He spent a second night. Yeah, and maybe talked to some people. Maybe made some calls to his mom, his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Listen, Mom, I got this song. I know it's a hit, but, you know.
Tell me what you think.
I mean, I've been begging Evan to write a version that's where the hook is, I'm trying to change the capital of Senegal without being disrespectful, but I just don't know if it's going to fly with Evan. Don't know if it's going
to
fly.
To me, I just hate it so much. I don't like listening to it. The music is annoying. We did a little bit of a musical analysis here today and talked about...
Dare I say more than usual? That's the most musical analysis we've probably ever done.
Sure. I guess maybe easier for me to talk about...
Because there's so few notes, it's easier to talk about.
Yeah, it's not like one of these songs that has up to 11 notes. There's a lot of levers to pull when you're talking about punching up something like this from the garbage heap.
Okay, so maybe we can include some ideas about Akon learning in the song, either between the versions of the song or during the song. I also feel like I'm embarrassed to say this because as we've shit on this song over and over again, we talked about how stupid and dumb the lyrics are, but I feel like it was only when we were listening to it this last time did I come to what I think is now will be accepted by scholars for all time as the primal theory of the lyrics, the tractor beam theory, that Akon really was going to say something respectful, but then just...
But the way that booty moved.
His eyes snapped to the booty. It was the booty's fault.
And he couldn't take more.
Is there a more modern, less blamey take on the tractor beam?
If he had his gender shields up.
Yes. Yes. It's a trap!
It's a trap! If he's able to make some character development throughout the song, then, you know, what I would say is...
We will watch your career with great interest.
One could only think that, you know, David Guetta, who's had to do his own living and learning over the last 10 years, probably had some kids or something. Well, maybe not, because he's 42 in 2009. But if Akon improved this song and, you know, finally made it a little more respectful, he'd look over at him and in that famous French accent say,
"You're the man now, dog."
Wow.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the back half of the song is the same as the first half. And you can imagine that Guetta has just heard Akon lay down his full sheet of lyrics that he jotted down. They still want to make about 90 seconds more track. And so Guetta just looks at him through the control room window and says,
"Utah, give me two."
Right. Why do a second verse when you can just do the first verse the second time?
"Give me two."
Is that a Point Break? Is that a Point Break drop?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. There's a shop around the corner.
Justin knew it.
Makes the best meatball subs.
Fantastic. I love it.
Justin knew it.
This song is actually much like Point Break.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Give me this theory.
Maybe this could be our punch up.
When you watch Point Break.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't work on any level. Like, when you try to explain to someone, like you know, if you go back to, like, when was it made? 92? And you're like, "Yo, I just saw this incredible movie last night." Mm-hmm. It's Keanu Reeves. It's Gary Busey's his mentor. He's, you know, he was a star football player. Now he's a cop. He's infiltrated a surf gang in Malibu. He's befriended them. The guy's name is Bodhi, short for Bodhisattva. You know, he's chasing them, but to become friends.
Your friend says, "What about Keanu? Does he have a normal name?"
No, his name is Johnny Utah. No. He learns the Tao of the Bodhisattva, and a bromance ensues to the point where he's not sure that he can do his job. Like, if you think about it, it's like Akon's like, "I want to do the right thing, but I'm compelled to do the wrong thing." And you think about it. And then also, we just think about all the parts of this movie are so bad, but the whole, it's a smash hit. You can't resist it.
Your friend might say, like, "Wow, is the movie so crazy as to have one death-defying parachute action chase?" And you would have to say,
"Utah, give me two."
Wow, so that's another idea for the punch up. So that's another idea for the
Point Break.
We'll keep in our back pocket. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just Keanu Reeves, horny for both.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
Welcome back. It's been a lot shorter than it usually is between records and punches. Some of the punches we worked on for as long as 2 months, and I think we talked to you 1 week ago today.
I gotta say, I was really surprised when that email came in that you guys were done. I hope it's not undercooked.
And the reason is, when we hung up the phone after our record, I turned to Evan and I said, "Evan, we have to have one just binding rule about this punch up. There's one thing that must be true about our production of this punch up, which is we cannot spend more than one night's worth of time on it." If David Guetta and Akon,
if they could do it,
if they could make "Sexy Bitch" in one night, it would just be embarrassing if we spent like 3 days of work making our punch up. It's just not allowed. I was like, we have to like set a timer and get done with this.
So let's talk about what we did. There's just so much to work with. We're not going to post our drafts, but we nearly came to fisticuffs over what it was we were going to take on. Were we going to try to make the song more respectful? That's what everybody wants. "Damn, girl, I love you. You're competent."
It just wasn't funny. We tried it. It's not.
Or we couldn't agree on the type of respect. But anyway, there was one thing that we really agreed on that we wanted to know more about. It was a real flaw in the original song, which is, how can we agree on the understanding of what is a neighborhood hoe?
And just insane to say, "I'm not going to compare you to my neighborhood hoe." Well, you just brought her up. Now you're implicitly comparing.
You did compare it.
If you tell someone not to think about a rhinoceros, they're thinking about a rhinoceros.
And I'm definitely thinking about a neighborhood hoe.
So we were a little stumped. You know, we were coming down to the wire with, you know, would we work less than one night on this? And finally, we had a brainstorm. You know, we've been emailing with the people at Broken Record, and we decided, for inspiration, what would we do? We'd pick up the phone, call Rick Rubin. Ooh. Call Rick Rubin. And ask him for advice. And we were shocked. If you recall what David Guetta said about a sexy bitch.
Oh, I'll play it.
You know, just me being open to life.
This is a 100% real recording of what Rick Rubin said we should do when working on our sexy bitch punch up.
I know I can't make it happen, but I know that I can be open to it. I'll invite it in,
yeah,
and welcome it. And
wow!
Exact same philosophy.
Same tape. We just had to be open to it, and we knew it could make it happen. Yeah. And
I'll just say that my own thesis around this song is that "Sexy Bitch" is a song about, or a production about, a failure of vocabulary. Akon can't come up with the words to be respectful at all, but neither could David Guetta come up with a musical vocabulary beyond those original five notes. Beep, beady, boop. And there's all sorts of clashes with the intro, like I detailed. So I tried to expand on that a little bit, give him a couple more tools.
Yeah, what would David Guetta do in More Than One Night?
In More Than One
so
Night.
So without any further ado, here is our punch-up of Sexy Bitch.
Couple new notes in here.
Yes, I can see ya. She look a lot like that whole Sheila. But hotter than Sheila. I gotta push through the crowd to meet up. They say she low down. Now she ain't like Sheila, I don't believe her. I'm saying I gotta throw down. Get with this mystery girl I found. She's nothing like this girl I've ever seen before. Nothing you can compare to your neighborhood hoe. Comparing her to Sheila, my neighborhood hoe, would be so disrespectful. The way that
damn,
booty
Sheila.
Moves
damn,
down
Sheila.
Until you're first gonna turn around once I pull up roll. I'm trying to shit, I'm shook to my core. Damn, I put my foot in it. I really stepped in shit. Damn, did you hear all of it? Damn, girl. Let's forgive and forget. I had no ill intent.
No
damn,
ill intent.
I put my foot in it. Damn, girl. I'm sorry, Sheila. I've had like 8 shots of tequila. Don't be a diva. It's my fault, but would you believe her? My orthodontist had me under anesthesia. That shit was the strongest. Gave me almost full amnesia.
Fantastic. Let's
go. Sheila, you know I've always admired you before. And I would never call you my neighborhood home.
To your face, at least.
If I said that word to your face, it would simply be disrespectful. I'm trying to tell you, Sheila, don't slap my face. I want you slightly to that phone. Damn, girl. Damn, it was an accident. A bad one, I'll
admit. Oh, my God.
Don't tell our moms about this. Damn, girl. Why are you activist? Don't be like this. It was a compliment. Damn, use a sexy...
You guys did more than just a verse and a chorus. I mean, you guys spent time on this.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
Even though we worked for less than one night on it, we thought, hey, why not write two verses?
Two verses. Two courses. Amazing.
What if every stanza was accounted for?
Wow. Yep. Poor Sheila. I love it. I mean, Sheila's really get the neighborhood hoe has really come to life in this version.
Thank you. That's exactly the goal. Yeah. That's it. Who is she?
But what I like about this angle on it is you really have to start thinking about the Akon running around calling his neighborhood hoe a neighborhood hoe. I mean, she's a person.
She's got feelings too.
Yes,
maybe she ain't, and she might want to be at the club.
I love it. We put a face to the name. We now feel the appropriate amount of both respect for our neighborhood ho Sheila, but also now understand how much greater this woman in the club is.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And I saw you nodding a little bit in recognition that we just made the call that by the time we get to the drop, the thing that was formerly Sexy Bitch and is now I Stepped in Shit, we've heard the five notes enough, in my opinion. So we're thinking, what about one of David Guetta's great songs? And we just subbed it right in, and wouldn't you know it, his songs just don't differ that much. And boy, Titanium and Without You, the Usher track, they just slid right in. They go right along.
So those are actual David Guetta tracks that we just dropped in. I mean, thus, not only did we work less than one night on this, but through trickery and studio magic, we caused David Guetta to work more than one night on it. Because he spent more than one night on Titanium, tracks, for sure. Yeah.
Listen. We're having a lot of fun at David Guetta's expense. Bro, what I'd like to know is, could you combine three Stravinsky songs and have it make as much sense as that?
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look at The Rite of Spring, the opening 32 bars of Rite of Spring is basically two songs put together already. I think Stravinsky beat us to that one. He just smashed it up, and then that's what caused riots in the street of Paris at the ballet premiere. You guys know that old story?
There was a riot?
I think it had more to do with the choreography, but at the premiere of the ballet Rite of Spring, this is back in the 20s, there was a riot afterwards. That's how much people cared about ballet back then.
Oh my God. Times have changed.
That's my sidebar nugget. I think what I want to do, Justin, is beg of you to return this favor that we've done for you in punching up this song and releasing it into the world to hopefully one day permanently replace the original. Can you use your connects at Broken Record to get David Guetta to come on our podcast and we'll say everything we said to his face?
I'll do my best. I will do my best, man. You know,
I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. Like you said, we've had a lot of fun at David Guetta's expense over the last hour talking about how we made the song in less than one night. But if I was talking to David Guetta, I'd just say, like, man, congratulations. You know?
There's not much else you can say to them, man.
You killed it.
Congratulations. You did the impossible. You took Akon. You took Clashing Notes. You took a verse, a chorus. You took one night, and you made something out of it. I don't know. It's kind of brilliant.
I will say all of that to his face. I will compliment him. I will worship at his feet, and I will also say, how about more than five notes?
Now, I'm glad we landed where we did. I'm glad we landed with Sheila, and not just because Sheila rhymes with Believa, but because through the reveal of the lady in the club being Sheila, we get to see in real time Akon realize the error of his ways, basically.
Yep.
I'm glad we went with Sheila, but we don't usually do this, Justin, but I am going to talk about a draft of this that ended up in the dustbin, in the dustbin of our Google Drive, and would have been in the dustbin of history, but I just can't help myself right now.
We're not in the habit of posting our drafts, but it's too personal.
As you may or may not recall, I am, as Evan says, juicy for Busey. My bachelor party, we watched a bunch of Busey movies.
We're talking about Gary Busey for the audience's benefit here.
We have his iconic line from Point Break in the soundboard. Utah! Give me two.
Yeah.
And you were kind of inspired in our first taping to compare this song to Point Break. And you kind of said, you know, like Point Break, it's a lot of things that shouldn't add up but become the perfect product.
And this kind of envelope pushing film criticism really sold Andrew.
I wish I dug into that more, because I think I don't understand how you think Sexy Bitches the perfect product still, and I also don't understand how you think anything is wrong with Point Break. But I did write an entire draft of this song that was about the movie Point Break.
Ooh.
I got so juicy for Busey talking to you about Point Break.
It ended up in
the drafts folder, and part of the reason it ended up in the drafts is because just a week or two ago, we did a punch-up that was entirely based on the plot of the play Phantom of the Opera. And it's kind of like, you can do one of those. You can do a song based on the plot of the Phantom of the Opera or a punch-up based on Point Break, but you can't do both of them a couple episodes apart.
Look at the level of restraint you guys have employed here. This is just, kind of applaud that.
Yeah.
So are you going to share this on air with them? Andrew, I'll say we didn't pursue this. I'm willing to.
Let's hear it. Everyone wants to hear it.
I'll just read you a couple lyrics here, Justin. He's nothing like the surfers you've ever seen before. Nothing you'd see on a Manhattan beach curl. I'm trying to befriend this man without having to arrest him.
The way that booty moving, I can't take no more. Swerving goofy foot on that short board. I'm trying to befriend this man without having to arrest him.
Ooh.
Damn, Bodie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, Bodie.
Yeah. Oh, he's adrenal.
Oh, yeah. He's adrenal.
Yeah. So maybe someday we'll release the full version on our Patreon. You can listen. You get all the punch-ups if you subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Gregory Brothers. Maybe someday we'll record the Bodie Point Break version of this so you can hear what I rhymed Ronald Reagan with.
Damn it. Are you kidding me? There's a dead president's reference. Or the president's. Excuse me. There's a president's reference. Man. Give the Patreon subscribers what they need, man. Okay. Record that, please.
Okay, we'll send you the lyrics. We'll send you the lyrics.
I'm with the audience, man. I'm fighting for you guys, the audience. Please record that.
Thank you. That's the push we need.
Okay, thank you so much for coming back, Justin. And we will be back in one moment with our walk-in music.
What is your walk-in in music?
Every week, we have our guests talk about a walk-in song and how they would use it in a fictional scenario. Should one of us start out this weekend?
Why don't you bring us in, Andrew? What song have you brought to the table here?
Okay, I it's in the Dropbox. You can pull it into the soundboard. We've talked about fictional scenarios before. I'm going to go super fictional, and I'm just going to rip off one of my favorite childhood movies, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. This would be like 100% my, like, I've got Billy the Kid in my time machine. I'm going back to get Beethoven. And this is what I want me and Billy the Kid to be singing or playing on a boombox when we come out of the phone booth to steal Beethoven. Hit it, Evan. And I just think all the German jaws would be on the floor. People would be like, what the fuck? We're here for the well-tempered clavier. Evan, did Beethoven do the well-tempered clavier? That was Bach.
No, that was Bach.
Okay. Anyway, we were here for Beethoven's interpretation of Bach's The Well-Tempered Clavier, which he was doing as a throwback to music from before him. And you're coming in here, wait, this is pretty good. This is beautiful. What is this mysterious folk instrument? The singing in the banjo in this song is just, I think, the perfect pairing to introduce, you know, Germany to American culture, to the African rhythms that traveled across the Atlantic with the early Gourd banjos. I just think it would change music history forever. And we'll get to in a moment why I think it would 100% convince Beethoven to get into the telephone booth with you.
Wow. That's quite a scene, man. What is this track called?
This is I'm a little sad because a very cool fan has started a Spotify playlist of all of our walk-in music, and this is not on Spotify. So I had to rip it from YouTube. It's kind of on Spotify. Beethoven hears this and he's like, what the fuck? It's the Ode to Joy. This guy knows what is up and he's in the telephone booth. The next thing you know, you're ransacking the Sam Davis Mall. Sam Davis High School football rules.
Sam Davis.
So you just want to play bluegrass Ode to Joy for the composer of Ode to Joy. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, this is just so so this is the closing credits of the movie Raising Arizona, which I watched this week. I hadn't watched since I was in high school. As you know, Evan, my wife and I are preparing to be parents, so I thought what would be the best way to prepare to learn about parenthood, the Coen brothers Raising Arizona. And this, the closing credits was just so beautiful to me after this great movie, and especially when they hit the Ode to Joy, it was just like, just tears came to my eyes. My jaw really was on the floor. I just think this is a really strong closing credits, but unfortunately, not included in the official soundtrack.
Great. Who did this? Composer's name is Carter Burwell,
who has done a lot of their movies, but before this, this was the first movie he did. He was like a rock guy in New York City, and somehow they tapped him to do Raising Arizona. But I mean, a lot of the chase scenes in Raising Arizona are to this like main whistling part, and it's so funny and so great and so fun.
I got to cue that movie.
It's good, man. I mean, it's like after watching the last 20 years of Nick Cage's career, it's a really amazing throwback to like, right, this is why Nick Cage was the guy in the 1980s and 1990s.
And
it felt weird in the 90s when he started doing action movies. Like, oh, that good actor who does weird movies is doing action movies?
Yeah, you forget because now you just remember Face Off now. It's unbelievable.
So, Justin, I think we're going to put you in the hot seat. Do you want to talk a little bit about your scenario first, or should we just jump right into the walk-in song? Up to you.
I don't have a great, like, one scenario, but this is a song that, like, you know, when you have those moments in life and, you know, maybe you're not you guys. You guys, I'm sure, are quick on your feet. But, you know, if someone says something to you and you just like, I wish. And then you go back and you're just ruminating on it. And you're like,
mind. Oh, man, the woulda, coulda.
This is when I wish I had like a Flavor Flav with me. Just like a sidekick, an assistant, somebody.
Yeah. I think at the jerk store from Seinfeld, you go back and you say the jerk store burn.
Exactly. I want a guy with me at all times with this on a boom, queued up on a boom box, just to hit play every time someone just says something where I'm like, well, I can't take it, you know?
So you've left, you come back to the office or the restaurant or the party.
Yeah. Fuck your bitch, you fat motherfucker. You know who the realest is. You win. You just win.
Are you afraid that this will make the argument go too far?
No. No. I'm on scorched earth.
Man, I don't know what they said to you, man. I mean, it must have been pretty bad. This is Tupac's Hit 'Em Up, which, you know, I don't know, some of our listeners know this, but some may not. Basically, this is the highest escalation you can get to. This is the linchpin of the East Coast, West Coast battle of the 90s. This song resulted in people's deaths.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. I will say a little shop talk here. Justin and us got our wires crossed for about 36 hours. And for about 36 hours, Evan and I thought that Sexy Bitch was his walk-in song and that this was his punch-up song. Do you know this, Justin?
No, I did not know that.
We thought that this was your punch-up song, and we were like, tapping our faces. Like, how do we
are we
going to
punch up Tupac?
Tupac.
Wow.
How do we punch up Tupac? How do we talk about this song?
And with a really loaded, historically loaded, like this guy died because he made this track.
You know? And, I mean, we had a couple ideas, and in the end, we were just like, we have no choice but to start a scorched earth battle between Headgum and Pushkin.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have to write broken record the meanest and punch up things that we can think of about Justin, about Rick Rubin, and about Malcolm Gladwell.
A
diss track about the 10,000 hours theory.
I really wish those wires had stayed crossed now. Yeah. I'm very upset.
Just take that away as a nugget. Just imagining your walk-in song as Sexy Bitch is pretty great, too.
That's pretty awesome. I'm exhilarated by the idea that you guys are going to punch up, Hit 'Em Up with a Pushkin disc track, and I'm mortified that you're not See, sexy bitch was my walking song. But,
That captured your essence.
But, I mean, also, you have to imagine the next level of that escalation, which is a diss track rapped by Malcolm Gladwell, produced by Rick Rubin, featuring Justin Richmond. Wow.
Wow.
That doesn't even exist and it's hot.
The sliding doors of my career. I mean, everything could have changed today.
I'll just share my walk-in music that I chose basically as a palate cleanser after listening to this Akon schlock for a few days. This is a track that makes me feel happy and makes me think of like wide open, sunshiny meadows or mountainside. So if I picture myself being in a recording studio for one day overnight with David Guetta, perhaps, you know, you get used to being in that environment and you forget what fresh air is like. So I burst through the doors. I come outside victorious because I've produced a hit in only one night. And I listen to this track, which is called Big Sur by The Thrills.
It's kind of that feeling where you've gotten really, really sweaty and smelly, but you kind of didn't notice it because you're in the studio all night. And then you walk out and you both realize how bad you smell, but you also smell the fresh air coming off the sea. And you're like, wow, that smells good.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that banjo?
There's a banjo happening on this track. I just like this. It's sort of an indie rock orchestral feel to this, and the aesthetic to me is fresh air. That's why I like this track.
It sounds windblown and sun-kissed, you know? It's really, this feels like Big Sur. It's an apt name.
Two solid adjectives for the feeling of this track. Yeah, and they did name it Big Sur, conjuring that image. So this is my walking song for busting out of the studio after charting hits.
This is what Akon listened to when he left the studio. Right?
There's no way he left the studio listening to anything other than a demo of Sexy Bitch.
Just downloaded his iPod. His iPod Touch.
His iPod Touch. He was playing it for everyone. I guarantee everyone heard that song in his circle.
This has been such a pleasure, man. I've just really enjoyed talking to you and dissecting this crucial piece of our shared history.
Check out the Broken Record podcast. I was listening to it over the weekend and listened to just an amazing interview between Rick Rubin and Andre 3000. It was such a great interview. I spent the rest of my weekend listening to the entire Outkast discography. And let me tell you, that is a pretty good weekend. It's also where I came up with that really dumb bit of pulling the Rick Rubin quote about being open that was like David Guetta. I'm going to admit, we didn't call Rick Rubin. We just stole it from your podcast, what? Justin.
Wait, you didn't have Rick on the line for that? I thought maybe he just appeared maybe in your kitchen, you know, while you're listening to Outkast, and he knew you needed him and gave you some inspiration. But okay,
he does seem like he appears wherever the wind calls him.
I wish, but yeah, he does. I love the Andre 3000 episode. I love the Jackson Brown episode, but they've done so many episodes. There's an episode for every musical taste. Go check it out. Justin, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at A-Rose Gregory. Evan is at Get Some Evan. Justin, where are you?
I'm at, man, mine are not as cool as yours. I'm at It's Jay Richmond on Twitter and Justin.A.Richmond on Instagram. Very specific. I don't know why.
Justin, I think that's cool.
That's cool. You're cool just being yourself.
Thank you. I guess so.
All right. That's our show, and we will be back next Thursday with another episode of
Punch Up the Jam!
Pew, 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 pew!
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up while you're beating. Punch up the jam, punch it up. Punch it, punch it, punch it. Punch up the jam, punch it up. Get the party going. Punch up the jam, punch it up.
Punch it! That was a HeadGum Original.